Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is from Sam, who says, Aston Martin announced an all-model recall due to faulty brake systems. Brackets. Thanks, Dad. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanner. So, let's be friends. Welcome to the Chinese Grand Prix race review. This review does contain spoilers from an actually action-packed Chinese Grand Prix. We didn't get the rain. The track surface behaved itself, except for the grass being on fire, which I think it shouldn't be. And apart from the lack of extra slippiness, you know, there was no extra elements in there to make it anything out of the ordinary. Yet, there was still chaos. So, coming up, we'll discuss why Stroll is not only bad, but objectively makes Formula One worse. How Norris is stamping stars on his reputation card. Daniel Ricciardo is continuing to serve an unknown curse. And Mercedes continue to underwhelm. And Max Verstappen delivers his least excited post-race radio celebration yet. And we'll discuss more on this morning edition of Missed Apex Podcast. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind support of our patrons and sponsors. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. So as we are doing these race reaction shows early on, it does mean that the panel will shift depending on the time and where they are in the world. So this puts Matt firmly at work. So he will be here early in the week to do a strategy corner. But today, there's a lot of action, on-track action, to discuss and talk about. We have an able substitute from Australia. We have Jonathan Simon. Hey, Jono.
Hey, Spanners. Yes, we've ironed out some tech issues to get sorted for this podcast. We had a bit of a concertina effect, but thankfully we didn't crash into the back of Daniel Ricciardo and we're ready to go.
Yep, that may be the first thing we talk about. We were also joined by race driver, car analyst, person and instructor, coach and champion, Brad Philpott. How's it going, Brad?
I am going to overtake all of you around the outside, despite my age, and do a great move at the beginning of this podcast. I tried a thing like Jono did.
Oh, you tried,
to relate my thing to the race, and I was Alonso because I'm old.
I thought you were actually referencing Lewis Hamilton overtaking Hülkenberg.
That too.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, that was equally impressive.
Yeah, that's the thing is, as if you're supporting somebody down in the back end and midfield, which us Lewis Hamilton fans are, you kind of scrabble around for those things and go, yeah, but what about that one time he eventually overtook a Haas? And that was a highlight of the race.
Yeah, exactly that. To be honest, I really like this track for modern Formula One, so I'm excited to talk about some of the action from today.
And we're joined, the agent of chaos from Denmark joins us, Christian Pedersen. Hello, Christian.
Don't you think I've been reasonably, cultured missed Apex podcast-wise the last couple of times?
No. Last time you were on, you kept just yelling random facts at me. Is that going to happen this time?
I did not. You asked for them. And I could tell by the look in your eyes, you were like, oh, I'm going to ask for it, but who knows?
Look, we're going to go straight into the action, and I'm going to ask a question straight away. Let's just get to it.
Whose fault is it?
I'm going to ask whose fault it was. Unbelievable. So the race is kind of building up to be not one of those, you know, smash and grab action packed races. It's not particularly looking to be drama filled, but it was developing strategy wise. There were people on different strategies. Leclerc was moving on to Plan D, which none of us know what Plan D is. But did you notice the Ferrari guy who does anyone know Leclerc's race engineer? Is that Xavi? Is that what they call him? No, no.
Yes, let's say that.
Okay. It's Xavi from now on. Have I just picked an Italian sounding name or a Spanish sounding name and gone for it? He gave it away because he said, okay, we're going to do Plan D. So, I mean, we already knew Plan D meant one stop. We'd figured it out. But
can I mention one thing about that? Because I noticed that as well. And in the past, they would tell him Plan D, Plan D. This time they say, what do you think about Plan D? Mm-hmm. And then I think that is a huge difference in how Ferrari go racing in 24.
Yeah, so they are having to sort of strategize from the pit lane a little bit still. Yeah, and it was definitely him pushing it. And it was quite interesting that he was scared that they were misunderstanding his pace. So he kept being scared that they didn't realize that he was flat out as reasonable without killing the tires. So they're like,
his answer was, if you like this pace, yes.
But I think he said it another couple of times where he was like, okay, just so you're aware, just so you don't think that they're suddenly going to go, okay, execute the plan, Charles, let's go. Just so you're aware. But let's get to that crash and talk about whose fault it is. I know it's been a spanners heavy intro anyway, but I'm going to lead in with, it was entirely Lance Stroll's fault. And this is what I know, controversial, isn't it?
How dare you?
But I think, like, okay, so everybody has a fluff. There's the odd thing, like Lewis Hamilton, I think in maybe 2009, and he just sailed into, no, it wasn't 2007, Canadian Grand Prix, sailed into the back of Kimi Raikkonen because he didn't notice the pit lights were red. Yeah. So you go, okay, there's things like that. There's things like rookies making errors. You'll have Maldonado playing with the steering wheel and then crashing. That was at China as well. But Lance Stroll has such a history of these kind of events. He has such a history of just not being aware of where other cars are on track. So how many times have we seen him just turn in on a car? So we saw him just turn in on Vettel, and that was after the checkered flag or something like that. And then he also did it to, I think, Verstappen in a practice session. There's loads of these occasions where he just isn't aware of the cars around them. And here, in this case, Daniel Ricciardo is absolutely fuming. And he picked up straight away what Matt pointed out to me, was that Stroll just wasn't looking at the corner. So Lance Stroll not looking at the corner, the car's concertina ahead of him. They all manage to not hit the car in front because you're supposed to. Like, it's definitely in the safety car, 100% on you to not hit the car in front. And while I'm not suggesting that it's never happened before, I don't think I've seen anybody just drive a wedge straight underneath another car under safety car conditions in F1. It was like he was trying to be a doorstop underneath Daniel Ricciardo. And it was such a big hit. It was such a big fluff that you throw your hands up and you say, if you weren't already over the edge on Lance Stroll, it's just one too many, because he took out Ricciardo, who was on his, you know, comeback. Lots of Daniel Ricciardo fans. That damaged Piastri's race as well. Loads of Piastri fans. He made the race objectively worse. So once he was gone, him being there or not doesn't make any difference. But once he was gone, because he's nowhere compared to Fernando Alonso, it's not getting better. But once he was gone, he left us without Ricciardo and Piastri as well. And not for a racing incident, not for some great move, just because he wasn't paying attention, he wasn't looking. And then accuses everybody of brake checking him, essentially, and going off on the radio, even complaining about the minor 10-second penalty. So that's where I'm at. 100% Lance Stroll's fault. A symptom of an underlying problem, which is that Lance Stroll shouldn't be in Formula One.
I think the fact that he received 10 seconds for that, and Logan Sargeant received 10 seconds for what he received, which we'll delve into a little bit later on,
and Max,
is complete and utter nonsense. The thing with Stroll is, and in history, drivers in a small sample size have incident moments. You know, Charles Leclerc in a couple of years ago was crashing from the lead all the time. Verstappen had his 2018 or 2017, one of those periods where he was had a lot of accidents in a certain period. Lewis Hamilton 2011, et cetera, et cetera. For Lance Stroll, we've had a big sample size now, and it's not changing after quite some time. You know, he keeps getting involved in silly incidents. He keeps getting involved in clumsy stuff. And unfortunately, the only thing you can defend him, it's 100% his fault. You know, that's the point of this segment, right? But the only thing you can defend him is by being, well, why was he, unfortunately, the fifth or sixth driver in line? That one of those drivers was going to be the victim of the concertina effect. And unfortunately, it had to be him.
Oh, I don't think that's true. I don't think it's inevitable that somebody was going to crash. Now, I'm going to save Christian because I think Christian might be slightly not quite as far forward on it as me. But Brad, it didn't happen to anyone. It happened to Stroll again.
Yeah, but all those idiots in front suddenly slammed on the brakes unexpectedly in exactly the place that you'd expect everyone to slow down. I'm obviously in agreement with you guys. There isn't really any question here over whose fault this was. I do slightly disagree with Jono in that someone was going to be the victim of that concertina, because everybody is involved in the concertina and it's literally happening right in front of you, as it always does when you're preparing for a safety car to end and everyone's going into a hairpin. It's just normal. This is like basic stuff that you would learn in a junior category, and nobody else had a problem with it. You're driving a car which is capable of going really, really fast at a much lower speed. You should have loads of time to think, and you just leave a little bit of extra margin because a concertina effect is a thing. But in this situation, they didn't even suddenly slow down. Lance's complaint that the idiots in front suddenly braked was complete nonsense. That didn't happen. When you watch the footage back, the cars in front gradually slow down like they always do. He just wasn't paying attention at all. And so his complaints are just, you know, obviously pure entitlement. It's obviously never Lance's fault. And we haven't even touched upon the fact that he already ran someone off the road and it was called a great move by the commentators and wasn't penalized on the first lap of the race. So anyway, maybe we can get into that too.
I won't object to anything that's been said in regards to Stroll and the racing today, but I would the general perception of Lance Stroll is very much based on the fact that, or maybe just the idea that he's just been given a seat because he's the kid of some billionaire, and he's more than that. I would definitely say he's much more than that. He's done things in the car sometimes where you're like, oh wow, he impressed me there.
He got that podium that one time, didn't he, all those years ago, in amongst all the bad stuff.
Remember the wet race in Turkey during Corona? That was just amazing what he did there.
Hang on, didn't Perez win that?
Yeah, he didn't win, but his racecraft. Oh, yeah. He did things with the race car normal people couldn't do.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that is what I'm saying. What he's missing, given the fact that you maybe, let's say, as a six-year-old, you're getting told to be a racing driver, and your father will deliver the car. There's probably some things that you won't develop, and it's those tiny small things the other drivers have that Stroll doesn't have. So I think it's a combination of how you develop as a driver, given the circumstances and what you have to achieve to get a seat in the future.
I obviously don't have a definitive answer as to why Stroll has these moments and why he can occasionally be what looks like a half-decent Formula One driver. Although I would say over this period, this sample set we've had of him next to Alonso and even next to an aging Vettel, I wouldn't say he's compared very favorably over that long period. But anyway, we know he can occasionally pull out a turkey performance for whatever reason that was. Or and I don't mean a turkey performance. I mean a performance like he did at Turkey.
Istanbul, Brad. Istanbul.
Istanbul. Or you know, the podiums he got earlier in his career once in a while. But there definitely seems to be, again, I don't know why, there definitely seems to be a large amount of his driver skill set that he doesn't bring with him to the races sometimes. And I don't know if that's because when you go through the junior categories, always having the next step guaranteed, regardless of performance, whether or not things like we saw today, that crashing into the pack, will have been overlooked, or he will have had an arm around him and said, oh yeah, they were idiots for breaking in front of you. It wasn't your fault. I don't know whether that lack of taking a responsibility and having accountability for the bad things you do then just continues up to Formula One, and then that leaves you with this sense of nothing's ever your fault, and therefore you don't need to work on that side of your driving, and you don't need to put in that extra effort. That might be the case. It might not be.
Well, you're describing being spoiled, Brad. That's what you're describing. That's
maybe.
Well, spare
the rod, spoil the child. Sorry, Christian.
Don't you think something's different with Stroll this year? There's something he might have gotten the telling of. You might not be in the car next year unless you.
He's exactly the same. He's just not good. I don't want to be mean, but you know, the thing is, it almost sounds like we're talking about Pastor Maldonado. Like this is like a 10 years later, sounds like the exact same conversation. A driver who had all the tools to be great and would appear in certain weekends, but most of the time is doing what Stroll's doing now, you know?
He's better than Maldonado Sargent. Do you think he's a better driver than Sargent?
Of course. I think Well, we have to see him in the same car. I think definitely he's number one.
I'd like to see Sargent have, I don't know how many years, is it 8 years? I'd like to see Sargent have 8 years in a more competitive car than he's currently in, knowing every single year, regardless of his performance, he was going to still be there the next year. And then we could maybe say at that point, you could compare the two, but it's not a fair comparison because Stroll has had the most gifted opportunity of any F1 driver in history of being able to underperform and always be guaranteed the seat the next year.
Yes, Sargent doesn't even have that.
No, it's basically unheard of. I know there are pay drivers that have paid to continue the next season each time, but never have those pay drivers had their family own the team they're in and it be a pretty competitive team at that. So I just think the opportunity Stroll has had isn't comparable to anything we've seen before. And the only way we can say, yeah, but he's basically fine, isn't he? You know, he's a decent midfield driver. We only have had the chance to say that because he's had so many years of just having another try.
Jono, I asked the live stream, I said, will somebody defend Stroll? Because no one here is really defending Stroll that much. And the first response from James was, why? Hello, live stream. Before we get too much of a breakdown of, you know, Stroll's sort of whole career, it's obviously looking worse now against Alonso. And they had a false dawn against a Vettel on the way out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this is indefensible.
Well, just back to the incident. So, Brad, you're saying if this was like Mugello 2020.
The Tuscan Grand Prix.
The Tuscan Grand Prix in 2020. Remember the safety car restart, everyone's going full speed, concertina effect. You're saying, Brad, the difference here is everyone's at such low speeds and they're under such control that Stroll shouldn't have made the silly error that he made.
I think what happened in that Mugello race was, if I remember correctly, the field went and then they backed up again. And it was very unexpected that there would be this sudden deceleration because people were waiting until they had to actually accelerate. They're trying to get an advantage at the front. And that caused a huge high-speed concertina effect, which wouldn't be expected from the cars behind. They were also around a corner and the cars ahead of them were on the next straight. Whereas in this situation, we're just poodling along really slowly, approaching a hairpin in full visibility, full view of all the cars in front. And there's just no reason to make that error unless you purely weren't paying attention.
And throwback, 2010 at this very racetrack, I'm pretty sure at one of the safety car restarts, we saw, for those people who watched F1 back then, some people might not even remember this, but Jenson Button, Lewis Hamilton in the McLarens, I think they almost collided, the two teammates, at this very corner at a safety car restart. So what didn't help Lance Stroll in this situation, and unfortunately, I feel like I'm defending Stroll by accident here, but what didn't help is the design of the corner for a safety car restart has brewed chaos in the past, and it had again today as well.
Jose's come closest to defending him, saying that Alonso also had trouble. But then Alonso steered out of the path of the car ahead. And do you know why he steered out of the path of the car ahead? Because he was looking at the cars ahead. So he was able to do that. Stroll also had that opportunity.
I've been involved myself in lots and lots of code 60 or safety car style restarts in multi-class racing, where you really can't see what's ahead because the cars ahead of you are quite big. And so you can't see necessarily what's going on ahead. And exactly what you just described Alonso doing there, when suddenly the cars in front slow down and you subconsciously make this decision, it's not a decision because it's subconscious, but you make this driving decision to not just try and brake and go in a straight line. You turn and you avoid the car in front. It's just the sensible thing to do. You do your braking into a bigger space where there isn't a solid object. Avoiding the car in front is the first thing you should do. And it's weird because either Stroll realized so late or he just didn't. Which is, again, a bit of a strange thing to do.
Johnny.
Jose said he's very sensitive to car changes. Alonso drives around its problems. Isn't that a sign that you're not a good driver? You know, look at Sergio Perez compared to Verstappen. Look at when people couldn't match. Look at when Kovalainen and other drivers couldn't manage. No, well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, Kovalainen couldn't drive Hamilton's setups. Mark Webber couldn't drive Sebastian Vettel's setups because they were very sensitive. And these good drivers are able to manage sensitive cars that are borderline about to oversteer off the road, and they're able to drive them to a world championship.
I'll just add that a Constantina effect, which we are talking about, doesn't really count in this case because everyone should just be braking.
Yeah.
It's a corner.
There might be no other corner on Earth where you brake more. That might be like the biggest braking zone in Formula 1. Well, Christian, that seems like you're going to have a bit more defending to do as we move on to the next incident, which
Ricky
was the...
No.
Oh, yeah, I suppose the consequences. I mean, we did talk a little bit about the consequences of that crash, which is Ricciardo ended up going into Piastri, and they both had rear-end damage then. So half the diffuser was missing from Ricciardo, and you could just hear the disappointment where he's got no rear end. Because this should have been a little bit of a redemption for Ricciardo. He's been up against it. And actually, Tsunoda has been saying all the exact same things as Daniel Ricciardo was saying previously. Like all the same things about, I don't understand. It's a good lap. Why is it going? Did they just swap the tubs? I love a conspiracy theory. But one driver was really struggling, complaining in a very specific way. They said they were going to give him a new tub. And then the next race, the other driver is complaining in exactly the same way. And they've reversed. So that would be my conspiracy theory for the day.
And we should be hard on Ricciardo as we were.
No.
Tsunoda, right? As we were on Ricciardo.
Well, we did say if they swap the tub and, you know, it all fixes it, then we owe Ricciardo an apology. So we did caveat with that.
I think at least it gives us something to look for in the next few races. We can now see, does that trend continue? Because if it does, then there may well be something to that. If it is just this one-off, then who knows? Maybe Ricciardo's just good at China.
But he did get a new chassis, didn't he? Oh, a new monocorp.
Yes, something changed. He definitely got something, they said, for this race. So, we'll see. I always say to people, react to trends, not spikes. But when you're here, I mean, I'm here anyway. So what am I going to do? Not react.
If the spike kind of agrees with your preconceived notion, then go with the spike.
Yeah, and then if we get corrected later on, we just change our minds and then say we never reacted to the spike and then just and delete evidence of that. Or even if they find the evidence, just say it was faked or something because everything's just AI now. We lost to Piastri as well. And then Piastri, to be fair, we'll get to McLaren later, as Jono says. I think now, as we're playing Whose Fault Is It, the absolute mugging of Tsunoda by Kevin Magnussen. Defend that, Christian. I'm going to zoom in on Christian. Zoom in on camera two, please.
He was not off track. He was on track, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's one good point. He was in the car. It had all four wheels. Two, three good points. I mean, he's 10 centimeters to the right. He should have been. But he wasn't doing anything in particular wrong. I see it as a racing incident, but it could have been avoided. That's how I see it.
So I watched this a couple of times, obviously in preparation for this show, because it was, one of the main incidents that happened. And everything looks completely fine to begin with. It looks like Magnussen makes the move. He's going to easily exit. Might not make the pass, but he's at least inconvenienced Tsunoda for the following straight. And then he just keeps going left for literally no reason. He's not understeering wide. He just drives into the side of Tsunoda and spins him around. It seemed like just a really careless contact, because it could have just been avoided totally if Magnussen had not run wider. It wasn't that he was being forced wider. The car, he wasn't going so fast that he had to run wide. in order to, you know, try and stay on the track. He just completed the corner and then moved a bit further left, almost unaware of how wide the car was.
I think this one's worse than Stroll's in terms of how easily it could have been avoided. Like, Magnussen did not need to, he wasn't understeering, right, Brad? He just went, I don't know, he just chose to pick that line and misjudged it.
It's exactly what it looks like to me. It does not look like he's understeering, because it both looks like at the point they made contact, they were driving in a straight line effectively. They kind of finished the corner. With the Stroll incident on lap one, at least he was significantly alongside the car that he forced off the track. You know, he wasn't ahead enough. He wasn't ahead, so he couldn't kind of claim the corner. But Magnussen was clearly behind and had full view of Tsunoda and still just moved to the left. It was quite bizarre.
Can I just one point?
Yeah, go for it.
Has any one of you driven this track on simulator or maybe?
I haven't, actually. I haven't, no.
Okay. Yes, I have.
F1 game, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's a very, very, as Brad was saying in the start, a very cool track. But it does have a lot of like the old school Formula One corners where, for instance, corner two, which is the second part of corner one that goes into three, it just goes on forever. And you have a little bit of negative camber. So you don't really, your car is behaving differently. And that is the same for corner 12, 13, which is onto the straight, and the 9, 10, which is where Hamilton overtook into 9. That part of the track as well, you always feel you can go faster when you go through there. Always. You have this, oh, I'm almost there. And then the next time you go a little bit further, you go off. That is how the racetrack basically works. And I'm saying corner 6, when you go out of corner 6, you always get a little bit pulled to the left. I'm not trying to make excuses for Magnussen because, yeah, we know him. He's racing his own race always.
This is the problem, yeah. That's the problem, Christian, is that it's not an isolated incident. We've talked about, you know, agent of chaos, Magnussen.
It must be, I can't hear anything. No, I'm sorry. You can just take it.
Oh, is that a technical issue? Is it like a driver on the radio being asked to pull over for his teammate, Brad?
I've just watched it back whilst we've been having the conversation from every single angle. And at the very least, you can say Tsunoda could have done absolutely nothing differently. He was all the way at the edge of the track, giving Magnussen all the space he needed. And Magnussen goes for a very late move. Tsunoda sees it coming and completely gives him the space. And Magnussen just uses more space than he's entitled to. I'm sure he knew it as it was happening that it was his fault. And Tsunoda's reaction to it was obviously completely justified. He was just minding his own business, saw a dive bomb, gave space for the dive bomb to try and avoid contact, stayed at the side, and Magnussen just kept coming. So it's a pretty one-sided incident, that one.
But does Magnussen care? This is the thing. It's an attitude thing. He's a dad now, which means he's sleepy and is about to get fat, if my experience is anything to go by. So, yeah, he's got that really cute little girl that he brings along and hands him his gloves. I think he seems like a lovely human. But on the racetrack, especially this season, I mean, the meme that I'm trying to create anyway of Magnussen's front wing, you know, being fully a consumable at this point, is deserved. Like, he doesn't care if he's hitting people. He's going to do it again. 10-second penalty, that's not going to bother him at all.
I've met Kevin numerous times, and he's a really cool guy. I remember once at our race, a karting track, where he used to have like an old muscle car. I can't remember if it was a Mustang. I can't remember. Like an old American muscle car. And he came to the track, and my kart was just ruined that day. I had some problems with my engine. And he came to my garage and tried to help me sort the engine out, even though he was a Formula One driver at that point in time, right? So, I mean, he's just a very down-to-earth kind of guy who's really nice, very well-behaved, very quiet in the background. But on the racetrack, he doesn't give a S. And that goes for everyone. And I think the same goes for Verstappen and Ocon and a few, maybe Alonso as well.
I think it's worse. Just quickly though, because you were on telly in Denmark when he was a kid, probably. So was he like, oh, look, that's the guy off the telly with the hair and the music?
I viewed him a couple of times. So once we had like a big thing where you collect money for cancer research and stuff. And it was a big thing where they collected money. And I did a go-kart race for that thing on national TV. And I had Kevin come and do the, like, he looked at the drivers and stuff, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, like the expert.
TV, right? So, and that, he was a kid back then. But he lives in Roskilde, where I did my go-karting. So I've met him a couple of times, and he's a very nice guy, but completely different on track. I like that.
So this is the thing. We've defended it all season, haven't we, Jono? But is it too much now?
What, defended his
He's just general.
Personality?
No, he's on track. The fact that he's just basically playing Skittles out there.
Well, I mean,
you want people to race.
He scored 1 point. Hülkenberg scored 4. Yeah, maybe you could do a better job there. I don't know. I like it. You know, one thing I noticed this week was when watching Fernando Alonso, I think it was during the sprint, or not during the actual race, but him just diving up the inside during the middle sector in a corner that you shouldn't overtake. Lewis Hamilton doing the same. Kevin Magnussen, you know, getting involved in what he gets involved in. I like drivers with personality. I don't want these guys to go. Keep being who he is. Keep causing drama. Keep getting involved in it and keep being who you are. It's what we need for the sport.
But today should have been avoided, right?
I mean, bad example.
But the penalty point system should be discouraging this kind of thing. So I don't know if he gets penalty points as well. That's almost more of a disincentive than the just 10 seconds. It doesn't matter.
Well, the irony with that is, in breaking news, is that Logan Sargeant received 2 penalty points for being 1 millimeter behind Nico Hülkenberg behind the safety car line. It's hard for me to even divulge that information on the podcast as to what happened there, which was ridiculous. So if you're going to put 2 penalty points for that kind of stuff, then shouldn't it be like 8 penalty points for like Lance Stroll or Kevin Magnussen's incident? Like, what scale are we giving penalty points here? I don't get this.
Yeah, I mean, if they wanted to, they obviously don't have too much of a problem because, you know, you could issue a race ban, you could do back of the grid starts, you could really hammer down on that kind of driving. But the general driving standards, you know, it was a very aggressive race and there was lots of mistakes, lots of pushing people off tracks and stuff. They've created that environment with the rules, Brad. And that's kind of a whinge we've had, you know, for the past few years now. The rules are set up for just allowing it.
Yeah, we have had a whinge about this the last couple of years. I've kind of said it to death, but I would love an overhaul of the race dynamic regulations. You know, who the onus is on, not giving massive priority to the attacking car and saying that they're allowed to force the car in front off. I really, really don't like how it is, but I do feel like at least we've come to the point where we understand it a bit more and we can at least judge the on-track action based on how we understand the current framework of the driving rules to be. So at least we've got that. But then it's not policed consistently. And you have a situation like Stroll. I don't just mean to bash Stroll. It's just he was involved in another incident on the first lap where you clearly have a car forcing another car off track. And not only is the car that gets forced off entitled to room, they're actually ahead at the point they get forced off. They've done it. Hülkenberg in that situation had done everything he's required to, as per the driving rules, to be entitled to racing room. And he wasn't. And there was not only... there wasn't a warning. There was nothing. It was purely just no action taken. And this isn't this isn't corner one. It is lap one, admittedly, but at a point where everyone's strung out. So it is still individual overtakes and moves. So easy to judge fault. And so even now, as we understand, we think we understand, how to judge who's at fault based on the FIA regulations in racing scenarios, we then get something like that where it's absolutely clear, like no question, and it's deemed no further action. So the attacking car gets even more priority.
That wasn't the only bit of, you could say there was some sloppy stewarding in the sprint quali as well. Just quickly, Stuart says K-Mag's front wings are an optional extra. And I was just thinking about what would the advert for the Kevin Magnussen toy car be? You know, fully articulated front wing end plate that you could just take off or move around like a Barbie doll. So yeah, the stewarding initially called Lando Norris's amazing wet weather quali lap, which just blew the field away by a second. The stewards looked at that, went, oh, he went off on the previous corner, and then deleted the lap. And then so you go, oh God, Lewis Hamilton's going to have a pole. And, you know, there's some Lewis Hamilton fans here, we don't mind saying. But, you know, I was happy for what? 2-3 seconds before you think David Croft on the commentary was literally going, and he's back on pole. And you're thinking, yes, finally, just a little bit of glimmer of hope at the end of the tunnel. And then Norris's time pops back up there. So initially, yes, I was there going, it's a conspiracy. They never would have restored Hamilton's lap because you're angry. I'm in denial. I've lost that pole. I've had it taken away from me. But learned some interesting things about the rules, which is I didn't know, Brad, that when you mess up the corner before, I thought that always meant you lose the next lap as well. But no, it's like completely track specific.
Yeah, I also did not know that this was a track specific thing. I don't know why it needs to be track specific. I don't know why that's, it seems like be easier just to kind of leave that one alone and, you know, just don't go off on the final corner of a lap, because otherwise you're probably going to lose the next one. Ordinarily, if you run wide, unless it's a particular corner where you can really gain an advantage by running wide on the exit, you're probably going to be slower on the next lap anyway. And at China, I think that is, you know, it is one of those examples. I think they put gravel there and, you know, it wasn't an advantage for Norris to go wide. But the advantage does come from knowing that, you know, you can just throw a bit more caution to the wind. And if you happen to go off, then it doesn't matter because I'm still going to get the next one. Or it doesn't matter as much. But anyway, yeah, I think the timing of the Norris reinstation was a little bit, that was what really was surprising.
Because it was heartbreaking.
As Hamilton crossed the line to complete his final flying lap, I'm sure that's the moment they reinstated Norris. And it, for a brief second, it looked like Hamilton had maybe improved because you just saw a little movement on the timing tower, but it was Norris going back to the top. But this is, again, not the only other example of weird stewarding. There are other things we can get onto from the race as well.
Yeah, I had a lot of excitement watching it. And I think it was Hamilton fans' Massa moment of 2008 in the world title, where you're hey, Hamilton's on pole. No, damn it. And then I had people headbutting random Ferrari walls behind next to me and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't know this was a track-specific thing either. I didn't even know this was a rule. Because it's only ever taken place at Bahrain this year. Another track example where this could be an advantage is Monza. You can run completely wide in the Parabolica. Yeah. Kota, another example, and then straight line it. And those extra few kilometers you can really gain a lot starting the lap.
So Suzuka, you could just skip the final chicane if that wasn't a rule.
That's true as well. I think so, actually. I've tried that on the sim once at Suzuka, and I think I've ended up like Timo Glock, like right into the wall. But I think it's a good rule to have. I just think, like, the fact that they enforced it when it's only been part of the race director's notes for one race, I don't know. It's a mishap. You know what? People are humans. Yeah, they can make errors.
But the
so
mistake was, the timing was deleting it in the first place. That was the mistake. Yes. That should never have robbed what was an amazing lap and strategy in the wet from Lando Norris. Christian?
You sometimes get the impression that some of the people who's making these decisions doesn't know anything about racing, because that was just, I mean, that was just so off, just even broadcasting that annulment of his lap, because everyone who's just been near a racetrack, even with their back to the racetrack, they would know going through gravel on the last corner will never make you.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. At first, when everybody, because all the TV pundits didn't know that was a rule either. And at first, they were all going, oh, yeah, you would lose the lap, but he didn't gain any advantage anyway. So they're right to just let it go. And I thought that was a weird argument, because they said, well, he's lost 0.3 in the first sector. All right. What if he only lost 0.2? What if he also lost, you know, 0.1? So for me, that's where the rules are rules crowd. It's very specific, isn't it? If it's against a driver you don't like, rules are rules. If it's your driver, you go, wow, he didn't really kind of gain too much from it. But that was irrelevant, because if we'd have read the race director's notes, we'd know all this, Jono. So I think we need to study up. We have an assigned race director's notes person.
Yeah, well, if there wasn't 5,000 races a year and I didn't have to, you know, mow my lawns and do all that stuff, then I would be able to, you know, eventually. Wait till we talk about Logan Sargeant's race report from the stewards or the incident and the penalty points, because that's going to baffle your mind even more.
Oh, I want to talk about Norris some more first. Brad, Norris, you know that I'm not a fan of Norris, right? And I'm not sure why. I pick my heroes and villains. You're free to pick yours as well. So in my camp, Norris is a potential baddie. So he's potential joining my list of my F1 baddies of like Verstappen, Schumacher, Vettel. But he is undoubtedly...
Why the bad list? Well, can you?
I like having baddies in F1. Does not everybody else have like goodies and baddies?
He must have done something that puts him on the bed.
I have to admit, it doesn't take a great deal. With Vettel, he used to celebrate by wagging his finger at the camera, and that's what tipped me over the edge, and that's what put him in the baddie list.
So I assume I'm on the bad list as well.
Yeah, you're on the bad list. Yeah, for sure.
Am I wrong in comparing Lando Norris's first few years to like Jenson Button's? In that he's finding a way to, he's scoring all these podiums. He's so close to a win. Eventually, I feel like we're going to get that hungry moment that Button had in 06.
Yeah, he's very limited by the cars and limited by being a baddie on my baddie list as well. There is a goodie list, so you know. But yeah, Brad, that's what I was basically, what Jono said I was going to ask you is, yeah, it's looking a bit ominous for in his career. He's starting to like build up this drumbeat of, yeah, that he's probably him.
Yeah, I think Norris is absolutely mega. I'm not a fan of Norris yet. I'm a fan of drivers because of moments that I see on track. And I don't necessarily mean, you know, being the fastest, but just things. I can't even put my finger on it, but mainly off track attitudes and general persona.
Yes,
like
same.
I'm a huge Gasly fan. I don't think Gasly is the fastest driver. And I don't mean that by saying I think he's a bit of a slow driver. I don't think he is one of the absolute elites. But I really like him. Really like him as a person. I've seen multiple occasions. Today was one, just one small glimpse where he was worried about his pit crew member when he tried to pull away without a tire fatigue.
Yeah.
And he was just it sounded like genuine concern from Gasly, like, was he okay? And I just don't feel like every driver would have had that same level of genuine concern.
You say Max would have said, that's what you get when you don't put the tyres on and then just
I wasn't talking about Max, but that's quite funny. But anyway, so that's how I become fans of drivers. So back to Norris. I think he is extremely high quality. I think Norris is one of those drivers who, give him the machinery, he's going to do the job. And he seems to have, in the short term, fended off the Piastri challenge.
Yes.
There was this moment, I know you thought it too.
I did, I got excited.
It looked like maybe Piastri was the person who was going to come and make Norris look a bit more normal, a bit more ordinary. But despite all the additional races Piastri has now had, you know, to find his feet and to get into a Formula One driver mentality rather than reserve driver or Formula Two champion, you know, he's now not a rookie, he's now had enough races. Norris is making him look generally quite ordinary. Piastri's still kind of surviving on the good credit that he's built up until this point. But that won't go on forever. And if Norris continues to be the person who tends to always be in front, you know, even if it's just by a couple of tenths, or tends to always be the person getting the podiums, then Norris is going to resume this role of one of the very next big things, you know, one of the absolute top talents that everyone's after.
He comes from a family who's quite well-funded, right?
Oh yeah, he's a billionaire father.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't think Norris is billionaire, just before you get
Isn't
complaints.
Oh,
I think
okay.
Norris is just, Norris's father is very, very wealthy, but not quite to the level of our billionaire characters we've got.
So that's the first mountain you have to climb of people trying to get you down. That is if you come from money.
And he was very defensive about it to start with.
Yeah, exactly. And then also he's a very good looking guy. He's very charming. He's basically taking the women from all other heterosexual men, and that is why
the
they hate
bastard.
Him.
Yeah, jealousy. There could definitely be some jealousy.
But then Norris has this thing where he don't mind coming across as maybe not knowing everything else, not being secure about anything. I think he has a high self-worth, but his self-confidence, he don't mind showing he doesn't have the self-confidence of an elephant. So, and then sometimes someone tells him, you got to be more confident and don't be so honest about your mistakes. And then the next race, Norris will be all like, blah, 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 blah. And then we all, what a show off. And I think he's battling those things all the time. And it goes against him, but eventually he will win if he just stays the Norris we like.
Okay.
I'm sure.
His dad has a net worth, according to crash.net, of 200 million, it says.
Oh, what a shame.
He's ranked the 610th richest man. It's just above us, actually. That would make him the richest person.
Well,
we came in at 612, didn't we, unfortunately, as Mr.
We just missed out. We just missed out. So,
what a shame.
Do you know what makes someone on the goody list for me? I think I'm the same as Brad. I just like fairness and sportiness.
I thought you were going to say they have to be top 500 richest in Britain
like
to make you a good list.
Top 1,000 at least. So, yeah, I think, you know, sporting things like Hamilton is sporting to a fault and he's sort of fair
don't
to a
Don't you think
fault.
Norris is fair?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know.
He is.
Yeah, I haven't got enough to, like, out and out call him a cheat or anything.
Well, where's he been unfair? He's been Norris. I feel like Norris's career, he's done nothing wrong. He just unfortunately hasn't won.
I think he's a bit mean. I think he comes across a bit mean.
Good.
And ruthless.
That's what you want.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's what you want.
I'm happy for him to be ruthless. That's great, and you can support him. But then I can have him on my baddie list in my little in my head canon. Brad, do you think he's probably gone?
So let me offer up some reasons why Norris can potentially fall into some people's baddie camp.
Okay.
So I don't think he's done anything on track that I can remember that you class as a bad thing. I can't think of any on track sporting things where he's driven unfairly. So I don't think that's it. I have seen a couple of examples of off track. Some of this is Drive to Survive. Remember when he was teammates with Ricardo, and I totally understand why he was like this, but Ricardo was struggling. And Norris was interviewed multiple times and asked, how he feels about it. And Norris was very selfish, as he needed to be in those examples where he was saying things like, I don't have any sympathy for him. Struggling is nothing to do with me. It's up to him to drive faster. He also, there was an interview, quite a famous interview, where I think it was one of the post-race press conferences or post-session press conference or a pre-weekend press conference where he said, essentially, well, yeah, Lewis only has all those wins because he's been driving the best car. And I think that rubbed people up the wrong way because although, people only tend to win if they're in one of the very best cars.
Yeah.
But it was the way he was kind of dismissing it. And he has no wins at this stage, not because he's not good enough, but because he also doesn't have a good enough car. So, yeah, I think those things, just like glimpses into a particular attitude that can rub people up the wrong way.
I might have
Having
to...
said that...
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, I know I've been talking for ages. Having said that, I think people warm to his quite self-effacing side, like today where he basically admitted after the race, I thought the Ferraris were going to come past us, but they didn't. He was kind of making a joke at his own expense. People like that side. And in particular, young fans, I really find warm to Norris. I think he really appeals to a certain age demographic.
Oh, Paddy's just said it's Adam Norris owns an electric scooter company. I think that was then his dad I saw talking to Ted Kravitz on the pit lane thing. I love electric scooters so much. I'm desperate for them to be legalised in the UK. I know people find them annoying, but you're wrong as you litter the street with your 18 cars per family. Norris can go on my good list if I get a free scooter. So if, in fact, just two seconds, everybody. All right, okay. If I look over my shoulder, if the people on the video will now see how I will be dressed if I... Get a Lando Norris. There you go. I'm a Lando Norris hat. I am a Lando Norris fan.
That's the number four as well.
Yeah, wow. Number four. That's what it is. Anyway, sorry.
We've all said this, right? And I know, Brad, I know you and I are both Lewis Hamilton, supporters. But hasn't Hamilton, in the same way in the past, he's dissed Nico Rosberg in terms of, he's not been friendly with him and vice versa for good reason. And
just to answer that one. Direct rival in a championship fight. So a little bit different to just like taking pot shots at a random other person, but carry on.
No, but Daniel Ricciardo is his direct rival as his teammate. He's got to beat him. The number two one was when Sebastian Vettel was winning at Red Bull. I think a lot of drivers, and not just Lewis Hamilton, but a lot of drivers out there were dissing Sebastian Vettel as, if I had that car, I would have won titles,
I think they were justified in saying that, actually. I think history has shown that they were probably all completely correct.
The point is, I'm saying is, I think it's not so bad to be on a baddies list. And I think a baddies list is to compliment spanners.
Maybe. I have to reassess this. I think he's not done enough to be on my baddies list. And I think Brad might have reminded me why. I think my Hamilton bias, I think because he's takes a lot of pot shots at Hamilton and sort of tries to devalue his championships and stuff like that. I think that's why he ended up on my baddie list. So I think I need to reevaluate that.
And I think that comes after Hamilton was super supportive of Norris himself. Like, do you remember, I think it was Austria 2000 and whatever, where Hamilton was behind Norris and went, such a talented driver, Lando. Like when he was like genuinely just saying during a race how talented he thought Lando was, things like that where he's really bigged him up. And so I think that's why it just... Okay. Does sometimes needle people.
We've taken a non-race diversion there, so I'm gonna get us back into the race. He did have the fluff at turn one was understandable. It wasn't the end of the world, but it did cost him. But that's a classic situation, I think, Brad, where he did cause that by not being willing to give up the place.
So we're talking sprint race, first corner against Hamilton. Yeah, it was an absolutely valid attempt to try and hang on around the outside. Turn one at China is awesome for for any F1 cars, but this generation of F1 cars too. It's nice to have the room. It's nice to have a really unusual corner that, you know, you'd think such a long right-hander, the inside would just be the best line to be on. But actually, you can carry more speed around the outside unless you run slightly wider onto the dirt like Norris did, and it doesn't come together. So yeah, it was a good effort. I loved what he was trying to do. It just didn't come off this time. And I'm glad there was obviously like no penalty or anything involved. Hamilton didn't do anything wrong at all. It was down to Norris that he put himself in that position. But yeah, it might have been slightly better advised to slot in. But again, only a sprint race, not that many points available. So it's not, you kind of either want to win it or you don't really care about the other position.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The next two drivers I want to talk about, I think, is Hamilton and then Carlos Sainz. So a bizarre weekend for Lewis Hamilton. I am absolutely just aghast at what Mercedes are up to. And I've got a little bit of a theory on this about why they went in such a drastic direction from the sprint race. So on paper, he has that wet qualifying performance for the sprint qualifying and is briefly on pole and then ends up P2. But it's really interesting to look at the drivers who did well in that session. It's the drivers that, you know, that we think are the greats, you know. So, you know, Norris did really well there. Hamilton did great, always been bulletproof in the wet. Verstappen fast in the wet, but lots of offs, you know, and Verstappen does have a little bit of a habit of having offs in the wet, but very, very fast in the wet. Made Daniel Ricciardo look ordinary in the wet at Interlagos. And then Lewis Hamilton lapped Nico Rosberg at Monaco in the wet. So, you know, the guys, you can see who the guys that are rain masters are very, very clearly. And then in the sprint race, you know, hustles for first place, outperforms Norris into turn one in the lead of a Grand Prix where really, you know, you were never going to hold off Verstappen anyway. You know, you might have had a glimmer of hope, but really it was completely expected that Verstappen was going to go and overtake. So he's won, quote unquote, he's won the race. He's won the race as much as anybody can win the race right now. And because of the new sprint rules, you can then change your setup, come out of Parc Fermé for the actual race and qualifying. They go a radically different direction and qualifies just horribly, right? Qualifies horribly. And they say, well, we went in a changed direction. And his comment is, I didn't think I could make it any worse, but oh my goodness, I did. He finished second and nearly qualified on pole. I don't understand the mentality, John. I have a theory, but on the outside, it's bizarre.
And, you know, this is something I'll tap to Brad quickly is when you lock in a setup that you don't like, you're in Parc Fermé, now you have to drive a full Grand Prix distance on that setup too, let alone you have to start from P18 and climb it into the points. There's no worse feeling than a driver. Anybody who's raced from go-karts to, you know, actual cars to even sim racing, if you do it on a video game as well, it is the worst feeling. And Lewis has had to go through that.
I have one small thing. It was a radio that Hamilton did to his engineer Bono after the race where he said, I won't make that setup change again. My bad. Thank you, guys. Good job on the pit stops. Another tough day. So he probably said, I want that and want that. And they gave it to him and it wasn't correct.
What did he do? Did he undo the diff or something? I don't know.
No, but he did change something about the setup. It probably had to do with the dry, wet conditions, right?
Yeah, well, it was just, it's bizarre, but I think my theory is that he was responding not to finishing P2 or the people behind him. And there's a little bit of luck in there that Alonso kind of created the Alonso train. But I honestly think as he saw Verstappen overtake and then pull away, that's what he's thinking about. He's thinking this setup, this car isn't good enough to catch Verstappen. And that's what he went chasing. So that shows you where his brain is. But I think that's a little bit detached from reality. He says there's an upgrade coming. The experimenting is too much. At some point, surely, Christian, you've got to race the car you've got, and he's just not doing it.
We've been talking about the Alpine car this year as the worst.
As little as possible, but yes.
It took him 6 laps on old mediums behind Ocon, who was on 6 laps old hards, and he couldn't overtake. That is on the longest straight on the calendar. That is just mind-boggling. I think when he was chasing Piastri, he was doing similar times, but Piastri had enormous diffuser damage. So his car wasn't working. Ricciardo had the same problems. He had to retire the car, but Piastri stayed in the race. But still, he kept the pace on the Mercedes team. One of the biggest budget in the entire field, with the 7-time world champion chasing him and he couldn't catch him. That is a very, very bad weekend for Mercedes. This.
Yeah, I'm not even sure the car is as bad as it looks. I keep saying
the start of the race always.
I keep saying, oh, but it's not as bad as it looks. And it becomes indefensible when the results aren't coming in. So according to James, he said he made the front suspension way softer. Is if his recollection is correct. So I guess that would make it pointier at the front. I wish Brad was here now because he'd know exactly what that does. Well, does that make it drop more under braking?
It makes it less responsive too around a track where there's a lot of direction change around China as well. So he's, you know, soft suspension is, you know, you've got more grip, you've got, but again, you know, when he needs to turn through corners, like the first couple of corners, the left, right, the sweeping one, the long right hander before the long straight, these direction changes, he wouldn't have the bite in the car from having a soft suspension. That's how I understand from my understanding and research of driving cars and watching F1, that's what I understand a soft suspension does.
Okay. Well, it didn't work. And someone's saying, well, why didn't he just start from the pit lane and brake Parc Fermé? I think that is a significant disadvantage, though. It doesn't put you at the back of the pack. You've got some catching up to do, and then you're using up your tyres immediately straight away. And the idea is that you start on the soft tyres, like Lewis did, and then that gives you an extra 8 meters off the grid. You're faster than all the cars around you, and before you know it, you're up in the top 10 anyway. But that didn't happen either. And it's quite interesting that he goes, well, I told you so. Yeah, with these tires aren't working. And man, that was a bad tire. Brackets choice. But he's very vocal about that. I think you can tell what arguments they were having before the race.
They've been very respectful so far. Since he's left and signed for Ferrari, they've been very respectful. It's been a very, you know, good relationship so far. Is today the first signs of cracks, you know, between them since this, because it was eventually going to happen, is that, you know, Toto Wolff's comments after the race about, you know, Lewis's decision to go in a different setup direction weren't nice either. So
no,
this could be this could sprint, be the beginning of the end.
After the sprint as well, he said, well, that was great from Lewis Hamilton. He went well, he was saved by, you know, the Alonso train behind, which is true, but you could big up your guy. But inevitably, that is going to get strained. But I know people are going to think I'm mad and delusional, more so than normal. I genuinely think the Russell doesn't get the most out of that car and Hamilton is constantly running experiments. I don't think we've seen exactly where that car is. So if they were in a situation now that they were fighting for the championship, maybe they'd be a bit more conservative and he'd be going for the points. But he isn't, and it's frustrating to watch. So we'll see. Upgrade for Miami, apparently. Right, Carlos Sainz. Brad, are you one of the ones who flip-flopped and said that Carlos Sainz is now the best driver on earth and every team should sign him because he had those two races where he was a bit better than Leclerc.
I think Carlos Sainz has the combination of being a really hard-working and very solid driver, and a driver who's got his head around the modern era of F1. I think those two things make him an absolute asset to basically any team. I think aside from the elite trio that you might point to, maybe it's a quad if we include Norris, the people like Verstappen, Hamilton, Norris, Alonso, those guys that we think, you know, every team would be desperate to sign. Outside of those, and I've missed Leclerc, but that's just because recently I haven't seen loads of great stuff from Leclerc. Outside of those, signs should be on everyone's list, and there are teams who need drivers. I don't know whether I would have been someone who'd flip-flopped and said he was the best thing on earth, but I just think you can gel with a particular era of cars, and I think Sainz has shown extremely well against Leclerc, certainly recently. And yeah, I think he's very much worth putting into one of the top cars. From what it sounds like, from what Nico Rosberg let slip during the broadcast today, it looks like he's got a really good chance of being in the Red Bull next to Verstappen next year.
Okay, well, I don't like Nico Rosberg. He was definitely on my he was definitely on my baddie list, right? But the advantage that of having him on the broadcast is he doesn't conform to the normal rules.
Exactly.
So I think
he says whatever. He doesn't care.
The broadcast I watch, there's a group think and with any group of people, we have to be careful in, you know, Missed Apex as well. This is why I like doing the shows so close to the race, because if we'd have done this at 8 o'clock tonight, by the time we got to the show, we'd all have been arguing all day in the WhatsApp chat and we'd have the kind of same conclusions. Whereas I feel like Nico Rosberg probably isn't invited into their group chat. But yeah, he just says whatever. And I do find myself agreeing with him a lot, which is annoying because he's on my baddie list. Christian.
You need to reanalyze that list.
Why? Well, Rosberg's definitely in the baddie list. He was Schumacher-esque in his level of or lack of sportsmanship.
And he didn't sock the balls.
He didn't what?
Yeah, that was a F1 reference.
Oh, okay.
You'll get it. I just want to say that Helmut Marko normally doesn't. I mean, he does say things to like spur a flame somewhere, but he's normally pretty solid. Just telling it like it is. And he said that Red Bull cannot afford to buy signs from the Audi agreement he has. It's simply too good and too much money.
So that tells you there that Sainz has had serious discussions with Red Bull to go over there.
I don't think anyone's
denying
that.
Between the lines.
Yeah, I think Marco and has said as much, hasn't he? But so not only that, you can have less money and be nearly guaranteed to get battered by Verstappen. Because Sainz isn't going to go there and challenge Verstappen. It's not happening.
Oh, I mean, it was just quickly, it's 2015. Sainz was battered by Verstappen as well. So it's like, oh, do you want to...
That wasn't Verstappen's team. This is Verstappen's team and Verstappen's car. Everyone's getting battered if they go there. Right. And then everyone will have to say sorry to me for slagging off Perez so much, because it will be even another data point that that's what happened.
Unless Red Bull genuinely do, maybe you're going to say this is the case. Unless Red Bull genuinely do just massively favour Verstappen in terms of equipment and, you know, and the effort that they put into his race weekend, I don't think he would batter Sainz. I think you'd have a situation where Sainz was in danger of this happening at Ferrari, where Leclerc was just prioritised. And then we had Silverstone, where Sainz took his first win. I think it was that race, because I think I was there. And we had the whole stop inventing moment. I think we'd have a Sainz at Red Bull stop inventing moment in a way that Perez doesn't do.
Yeah.
I think Sainz believes in himself a bit more than that and has shown well against high quality current drivers in a way that Perez hasn't necessarily.
That might be part of the reason he got sacked from Ferrari, though. Things like stop inventing.
Maybe. But I think I don't think Sainz would be satisfied with the Perez situation. And I think he would make sure he's young enough and confident enough in his own ability that he would make sure he didn't end up like that. And I think Verstappen is brilliant as a driver. I just don't think he's godlike in the way that he could be built up to be, because I don't think anyone is godlike.
No.
I think
same with Schumacher.
All drivers, they're only driving at a level which is realistically achievable. They're just very slightly better than other people. And I think Sainz is good enough that he could challenge in a way that Perez isn't.
Christian or Jono?
Christian, you go. He was yielding to you, see? He's being very Matt-esque.
He yielded to me. He's being, on the straight.
Yeah, he's being co-hosty. So he's you're our guest. Hello.
Like all the other Australians, such a nice guy.
So calm.
It's an anomaly, but yes.
Has anyone heard about the setup changes for Perez this year? Because he apparently last year he was trying to do his own thing, right?
Yes.
Trying to find the speed, and now he's just doing what Verstappen is doing.
No,
and
I think it's the opposite. I think it's the opposite, Christian.
I thought it was the opposite, yeah. Unless we're wrong.
So what we heard...
The way I read it is he's using Verstappen's setup this year. Is that wrong?
Well, we'll put a pin in it, but here's my impression, was we heard from the shop floor, I think about a year ago, that Perez was determined to make Verstappen's setups work for him, whereas now he's ignoring that and he's developing through the race weekend by himself. That's what I heard, if it's the wrong way around, but that seemed to be backed up by a Horner interview post-race. But in any case, he's changed his approach to something more sensible because he's obviously closer this season or less far off.
There was an interview at some point with a couple of drivers, and they asked them, if you put all the drivers in the same car, what is going to be the difference? And they said, tops 5/10, maybe on a bad day 6/10, but that is what is the difference from the fastest to the slowest in the field. And I know I follow you, Brad. No one is above. No one is godlike. But maybe Verstappen is doing the max to 7/10.
Yeah.
So you're basically saying that Perez is the slowest driver in the field because today he was over 6/10 a lap slower. And you're saying that the gap between the best and the worst driver is 6/10 and Perez is 6 to 7/10 off. So effectively, Perez is worse than Sargeant.
I'm saying that Perez is 4 to 5/10 slower than Verstappen on average.
Which That's is huge. Bonkers yeah. in one of the very top teams. You should have drivers who are within a couple of tenths of each other. So
yeah, but it says more about Verstappen though than it says about Perez, I think.
Well, it just says that Perez is in the wrong team if he should be in the sport at all. And hopefully, I won't get too many more death threats on Instagram from Perez fans. But I just think we can. There are certain things we can.
Wait, Verstappen fans or Perez fans? Which ones? It was Perez fans, wasn't it?
I've had them from both, yeah. but more recently from
that was because if the person who's listening, who put us in the Daily Express. By the way, I would like to say thanks for linking back to the website. That was really cool of you. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really mind that Brad got the death threats because I personally benefited.
They've also petered out a bit. There was only one yesterday, so it's fine.
Oh my God, I didn't realize it. I'm so sorry. That is deadly serious. I'm sorry, but also I found it funny.
It's
so
funny. It's
a true I'm just going to tell you, in the 90s, before social media, I got a bulletin, like a 9mm,
and
just a little piece of paper written on a machine saying, stop it.
Oh my goodness.
You shouldn't have been mean about Perez.
Yeah,
I
know. Anyway. I think Perez wasn't even born back then.
I just want to say, I don't care how many death threats Brad gets, as long as we get promotion. So,
well, when you get a death threat, Brad, it's because you're doing something right. It's because what you're doing is being listened to, that is all.
My main point is just that I don't think that Verstappen is 6/10 ahead of everyone. I think he is absolutely potentially 6/10 ahead of the slowest driver in Formula One, and that the gap between the best and the worst is probably about 6/10. It's just that it seems a bit of a shame that in an era where you've got one team who is clearly a big step ahead, the one of the two drivers in that car is one of the drivers who is at the other end of the performance spectrum. So it would just be nicer to have someone who at least could challenge Max slightly more. Maybe some of those tenths are because of what I said before. Maybe there is an element of favouring one driver because they're better, but then that enhances the gap and makes it look worse than it actually is. But it's annoying, whatever the reason is.
Okay, I'm going to actually defend... defend Verstappen, actually. Thank you. Okay, so I'm just having a slight technical issue. There we go, we're back. I'm going to defend Verstappen because I think you can do more than just be 7/10, 6/10 faster than the rest of the field. And we're seeing that today because we don't even know the gap today. He was in cruise control mode up front. He could have lapped the field, and that's common. And I think it's not just about how fast you would be in equal go-karts. If you are able to build the team around you, and that includes everything from politics, from feedback, from setup information. He's famous that he has a weirdly sensitive feedback, and he's in the sim constantly racing. I think then you can extend that advantage. So you can only drive as fast as the car is capable. But if you're part of the reason that that car is able to reach its potential with setups and develop well, and you've got designers that know Verstappen will respond to this, then you can separate yourself even more. And that is what he's doing.
At risk of steering away from the race, why can't he be the greatest driver we've ever seen enter this sport right now? Right? Because think about it, humans, we develop over time, right? So like, okay, the Fangios back in the day, you know, Lance Stroll's probably better than Juan Manuel Fangio. But back then in the era, Fangio was as good as anyone had ever seen, but talent-wise. So why can't Verstappen, with being, you know, 16, 17 years old in F1, right? He literally lives motor racing as is, I think Formula One's his hobby. Sim racing is his job. At the moment, all he does is race. All he does is keep his mind active. He's in good shape. He's like, okay, the only argument you could have is who's been a very good dominant teammate to compete with him. That's what we want to see, to just prove his career. I think that's all Verstappen needs right now, is just one big kind of Nico Rosberg type teammate, you know, or a level of that to compete with him. And that's why it'd be good to see Sainz or Leclerc or someone like that.
I haven't had a chance to slip into my my Verstappen arguing against Verstappen
hater.
Best. Yeah, yeah, I didn't want to say it. I haven't had a chance to use this side of me for a while. So let's just take the opposing side to Jono there. The thing that I think he needs is a title fight that he's not gifted it at the end, despite not actually doing the final job. Because I think all I've seen so far, when the pressure was on and actually there was a real title fight.
Yeah, he was terrible those last few races.
Yeah, when it really mattered, he was definitely the worst of the two drivers in the championship fight. You know, doing things like cutting corners, brake testing, not being penalized sufficiently for it, and then doing a worse performance in the final race and still being given the championship. So those things, he hasn't proven anything in that aspect, I think, to show that he's one of the great, you know, one of the absolute best.
Yes.
Speed, I think, isn't in question. I think he's obviously absolutely as fast as anyone's ever been. So it's that and you know, a title fight where he's absorbing pressure, making the right decisions under that pressure when it matters. It's not the same thing when you're out front leading by miles. Obviously, you can make different decisions, have more time, be more calm, look like you're mature and cruising and it's easy. So I think that's what we're missing. And that will either come from a teammate worthy of his talent to fight against, or another championship fight with a different team where it does go, you know, a bit further down the wire and it's a bit harder and he comes off on top. He obviously had the beginning of 2022 against Leclerc, where the Ferrari was a bit quicker. So that was probably the closest I think we've come. But I just need that one more step to be satisfied.
Has anyone of you guys ever played like a Modern Warfare or Call of Duty kind of shooting game?
Yeah, I'm a video game loser, yeah.
have you ever tried going into the settings on the controller and then putting your sensitivity up to maximum?
Yeah, that's what Albon said, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is probably the first result of like a sim racer gone real racer and seeing the product of adapting from the electronic world and the reflexes of everything just going crazy. I mean, no one can do a shooting game on higher sensitivity doing it in a racing game or doing it as a racer. The clicks, it's just amazing, I think.
I've got to add this bit. And when I was racing in the World Championships of Sim Racing, I did a couple of years there. I had some setups where we had a team of like eight of us, you know, two of us were racing in the top level and blah, 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 so on. The other seven teammates I had could not drive my setup in the races where I was either on pole or near the top or winning and that kind of stuff. And teammates could not drive them. In the teams where I found myself third best, fourth best, I had easy setups. I couldn't drive the best driver's setups. And it's this same correlation now with Max Verstappen, is that he finds a way to, his talent overcomes this and it complements his setup skills and it complements the sensitivity and everything that Christian just said. So anyway.
I don't disagree with any of that, but that all relates to speed and it's pressure in a fight. It's the racing side of it I need to yet see. So yeah. I'm on board with you with the speed.
To become the world champion we all respect, you also need to show some gratitude and some respect to others.
Or you go on my...
Has to earn that, right?
Or you go on my baddie list. That's what ends up happening to you. Well, this is Missed Apex Podcast. It's review of the Chinese Grand Prix. And it has kind of turned into a reaction show, and we've drifted away from the race. But this is what I wanted these race reviews to be so close after the race. It's the reaction and the thoughts that come to your mind after having watched that race. I know there's a lot of reviews out there. I listen to them and they're just sort of telling you what happened in the race. You go, yeah, I know. I watched that. So look, okay, we have a different panel every week and we get different reactions, which is why I've just been happy to let that go. Brad and Christian have been on fire. They've been chaos. Well, I apologize for a little bit of ducking on Christian. So if we end up talking over him, he's gone quiet. But I think that did save us from an edit, because I'm pretty sure he referenced Kevin Magnussen talking to Nico Hülkenberg earlier on. So one thing that happened in the race, Brad, was the virtual safety car. That was chaos, basically.
We're talking about the virtual safety car that happened really late, as in
the
driver had
late.
Been stopped at the side of the track for ages. He then got out of the car, put his steering wheel back on. We've got it on camera. It was still just yellow flags whilst the driver was stood there at the end of a long straight. Right in the firing line. If any car had had a failure or locked up, or I appreciate it's under yellow flags, so they shouldn't do that, but people like Lance Stroll on the track, and anything can happen, even when it's under safety car conditions. So being at the side of the track when it's not completely neutralized is a dangerous place to be. Ultimately, lots of Chinese circuit officials had to then come and try and move the car. At that point, it was under virtual safety car. But prior to that, Bottas was stood there totally vulnerable. And it was an absolutely crazy decision to not just... What's the point of a virtual safety car? It's so you can respond to a situation like that quickly and neutralize that section of track. And then if it then turns out it requires a more safe scenario, you then go full safety car. But they just didn't. They just waited and waited. We see this all the time. Indecisiveness. It's almost like they're waiting for people to not be disadvantaged. You know, everyone needs to pass the pits or whatever. Yeah. So you don't get one person disadvantaged. But that shouldn't enter into the discussion. I really hope it doesn't. I really hope it was just incompetence rather than deliberate incompetence. Yeah.
It would be better if that was a mistake. So we had the Russell in Australia where they said, well, it's near the end of the race anyway, seemed to be the sort of mentality. And there's a lot of inconsistency when they pull these things. So to me, I thought the virtual safety car was essentially an electronic double-waved yellow. You know, and these are things that you look at, you know, Bianchi, who died under double-waved yellows. The virtual safety car is a, do you know what? There's a genuine danger. We don't actually trust you guys we don't want to leave it in your hands how you choose to enforce that. Because I always feel like the yellow flag is you're being asked to voluntarily disable your race or disadvantage your race. And then you have to judge who around you is disadvantaging less or more than you. Virtual safety car kind of takes it out of the picture.
Yeah, this was obviously, it was then a virtual safety car. So we are right in that it should have been a virtual safety car. When they then found they couldn't move the car for whatever reason, I mean, it should just be a case of pressing the neutral button that's on the top of the cockpit. It was very clear the car was still in gear when the marshals were trying to move it. So I don't know whether that just failed or whatever. But then it was upgraded to a safety car. But the fact was, it was clear to all of us watching that was a dangerous enough situation. A driver had to get out of the car and walk across a bit of the track. That's definitely a virtual safety car, so don't wait 2 minutes for it.
I have some severely breaking news. Uh-oh. Daniel Ricciardo has been handed a 3-place penalty for Miami.
What?
For overtaking Nico Hülkenberg during safety car conditions. And I think about this and I go, there was a situation. Now, from what I understand, is anybody on par with this situation, and even in the live stream comments, let us know, is that I believe... Daniel Ricciardo believes that Nico Hülkenberg overtook him unfairly under the first safety car. So then Ricciardo deliberately overtook him under the second one.
Well, then yeah, I think
it's a slam dunk penalty, but it's a bizarre situation. If that's how I understand it.
Yeah, well, that's a very silly decision then. If that's what he chose to do, took it upon himself to do it. You've got to get clearance for that kind of thing, surely.
Yeah. Well, it was like Lewis Hamilton 2009 Australia, and he got disqualified for lying to the stewards. Kind of different story, different picture. But I just thought I'd mention that because I kind of find it a bit bizarre, Christian, that Ricciardo's got a 3-place penalty.
It says Ricciardo thought that Hülkenberg overtook him during the safety car, so he was allowed to re-overtake.
Oh, the same period. Okay, my bad.
So it's, but still, I mean, come on.
Also,
it was as it was.
Can't we?
That's Australia 2009.
Can't we kind of hit him with time served? Like, you already got taken out in the most moronic way. The person who took you out only got 10 seconds. You're already out of the race. There you go. Do you know what?
Yeah, no, agree. No, sorry, Spanners. I was going to say, Sargeant got 10 seconds for essentially, technicality, the same exact thing, overtaking on the safety car. Because remember, if for people who don't know, the Sargeant incident I'm referring to is Hülkenberg exits the pits, crosses the safety car line, literally millimeters ahead of Logan Sargeant. And so Sargeant's then taken the position ahead of Hülkenberg in the safety car period. Sargeant's then been handed a 10-second race penalty for that, moving him from 17th position after the race to 17th. And, of course, 2 penalty points to his license. But I want to know a bit more about the you know, I've read the stewards report, which we won't, you know, read on the podcast right now. But what I don't get is, why is there no explanation that was the team notified of this? How is Sargeant supposed to determine if he's millimeters away from overtaking someone?
Apparently, James Vowles had said, "Oh, you're okay," or something, along those lines. Yeah. I saw some comment along those lines. Hey, Christian,
yeah, the problem with handing out penalties like that is you sort of build a middle ground between you and the sport. Sort of, it's like you don't understand the sport. You only like lawyers. It says so in the text, but. But text is never real life, and why not just call him up saying, "Sergeant, listen, sorry, buddy, he crossed the line before you, yada yada. Give the position back. The end." Why all that?
Yeah, and also, if he'd not been crashed out, he would have been able to serve probably a 10-second penalty.
Exactly.
And so, because he got crashed out, he's then got a 3-place grid penalty because he can't serve it in the race.
They are basically making their own problems.
What did Daniel Ricciardo sleep with someone's wife? Because he is just getting I hope he got something out of the deal, because everything that could be going wrong with Ricciardo at the moment is going wrong. No, that's awful. I mean, I hope there's some justice for that. 3-place grid penalty and carrying it over when he could have served it in the race feels like unnecessarily personal. To be honest, so guys, we're running short on time. I don't want to keep these guys here for 2 hours. But I think everybody's been happy with the midweek drop-ins. We have actually got an interview or two lined up for the week. We're going to be re-exploring the 2016 battle between Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton from someone who was there on the ground. And also, we're going to be speaking to, a NASCAR boss who has invited me to come and hang out at a NASCAR race. And that should be quite interesting as well, to see if I can be converted. I've done it on iRacing, so I think that's virtually the same. However, if you'll tolerate it, I did say to Matt, because I knew we wouldn't be strategy heavy on this show, I did say to him, come and do a strategy corner as well, where we can pick up some of this stuff too. So I think that's what we'll do. We'll start off with a strategy corner, and then we'll have our longer interview about 2016, and then we'll do the little NASCAR segment at the end, and that'll be a nice bit of midweek content, I think. So here on Missed Apex Podcast, right here, right now, it's time for us to fluff and to fill while Spanners finds the button that makes the stream do that. It's the podium, champagne bottle, champagne for Max Verstappen with his most excitable post-race interview yet. And I can't help but think of the Minions meme, you know, where they're so happy to go into the cave and play football, but then as the centuries roll by, you know, they're sadly kicking the football into the goal and going, yay! Because they can't muster up enthusiasm for that level of domination. And look, it was easy. As great as we're saying Verstappen is, I have defended him. I think part of the reason he's that dominant is down to him and what they can do with the car, knowing he's a driver. But he did not have to race anywhere near his potential today. So he could have raced 10% worse, pushed 10% less, and saved 10% more, and he still would have won. So you can't really go out of your way and say, well, was that a particularly good performance? Unless you go, well, all his performances are spectacular, even if he doesn't have to try because he's so good he doesn't have to try. That's a possibility. We could do that. The champagne was for Max Verstappen, and yeah, they must be feeling the sting of this dominance, I think, as well. Not a sting. It's probably less of a sting for them. A sting for other people. But we can give out awards anyway, based on that. So let's start off with, we go negative first so we can end positive. So I'll ask.
Oh, Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Who missed the apex for you? Where should we start? Let's look around. Who looks unprepared? Christian, you look distracted.
Can I point one thing out in regards to what you just
sure,
said about
Verstappen? Sure, yeah, of course,
In football, in soccer, when some teams won it all and kept buying all the best players and stuff, they changed the rules. So yeah, they changed the transfer rules and stuff like that. And Liberty has to soon do something equivalent in regards to the dominance Red Bull are having, because it's going to ruin their money, basically.
Yeah, well, it's look, the sport is in bad health because of it. And I for the sporting purity, you know, I get it. But this is as bad as the Schumacher era now. It's really, really hard to defend. 2013 as a one-off, you go, yeah, but there's great racing in the pack. And there was. 2013 had really good racing in the pack. Hamilton and Hulkenberg seemed to have had loads of great wheel-to-wheel battles, for example. And but if that had happened three more years, if that happened 14, 15, 16 again, you'd be basically where you are now and where the Schumacher dominance was. It's really hard to defend this level of dominance, and it's strange that Formula One has kind of just let it drift to this point. But when we were talking about the safety car, you go, they should have just thrown a safety car straight away. As soon as the safety cars were going, that was the most interesting part of the Grand Prix, on the restarts with the cars at least packed back. You know, at least they're in the same screenshot. At least you're watching the midfield race. So the most short-term thing they can do is go NASCAR and just go full competition caution. Like, sport of it be damned, because at this point, there's just nothing interesting going on if there isn't a safety car. So just like someone sneezes on track, that's it. Safety car. Bit of wing on that safety car. Just build it in. Competition caution until this situation resolves itself. Because this could be another 2 years, Christian, of it. So you've got to give us something.
So was it the worst thing first, right?
Yeah, the bad thing. Missed the Apex Award.
I'm not sure this is a bad thing, because I actually really enjoyed this, but it's probably a little bit bad for Alonso. So during the build-up on, there's a YouTube F1 channel where they show the build-up where they run around the track on big trucks or do some pre-race interviews, right? In China, they did it all on the straight, on the main straight. And they had the two drivers from each team, starting with the Red Bull guys, coming out and being interviewed. First, they did Yuki Tsunoda, and they did like one question in half a second, and his answer was like, you know, and then his own language. And no one said anything. There must be some Japanese-Chinese thing there. There's definitely something. But then, after the Mercedes guys, everyone loved Hamilton so much down there. So they had big banners and everything.
Yeah.
So when his interview was finished, he moved aside and all the photographers followed him. Everyone was screaming and stuff. And then it just cut to Alonso standing, looking into the camera. All the people who were supposed to take pictures of him were moving away in the background. And all the attention was moving away. And then the interview was done with Alonso. This was probably the worst situation Alonso could be in all regards. But still, he keeps saying things about Hamilton, small pills, like, and then he puts himself in a situation like this.
And look, if you get yourself into a Taylor Swift song, you know you've done something. Yeah. You've done something bad. You crashed that Aston Martin, Fernando, and now you have to live with it.
But it's facial expressions when he's putting a situation like that. You can just see it boil inside of him.
Oh. Brad. Hello, Brad.
Hello.
You're really good at driving race cars, and you could coach people as well. And I want you, if you're serious about improving your times on the sim or on track or on karting, I can personally and highly recommend coaching from Brad. I'm really pleased to see you doing it more. It's becoming quite a staple of your freelancing, and you have spots available.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying being back in essentially full-time driver coaching and race instructing. So having done tyre testing for 5-6 years, I'm now back in the more of a competition world. So I was at Silverstone yesterday all day. I'll be at Cadwell Park all next weekend and Croft after that. But in between, in the weekday times, most of the time, as you say, I'm doing sim coaching. And if anyone's interested in being faster on a sim, check out theracecoach.com.
Theracecoach.com.
Theracecoach.com, where you can see all my availability and you can check out what we do And if you're interested, get in touch.
Definitely
would. Pretty good at it.
You're great. You're great at analysing and understanding rubbish drivers as well.
So I need to tell you my bad thing of the weekend. I'm going to take a really easy one. And that is just Lance Stroll, because it's going to be a popular choice. I just want to quote Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh, yeah. He was so angry.
I'm just taking part of the quote because it'd be ages to read it all. But he says, "What made my blood boil is I watched his onboard just to see it from his perspective. And as soon as we start braking, you can see his helmet turn right and he's looking at the apex of turn 14. He's not even watching me. I should do this in a Ricciardo voice. Daniel Ricciardo, I'm quite good at their voice. When he looks back, he's suddenly in the back of me. I don't even know what he's doing, where his head's at. All he has to do is worry about me, and he clearly wasn't. Let's see what he says in the media, but if he comes after me, then I'll say more." I love it. I love it.
Yeah,
can't wait for him to say more.
He was saying, I could go off, but I'm going to hold it. And he's clearly fuming and holding it back. And he should be. He absolutely should be. What a ridiculous way for your Grand Prix to end. So you've taken the easy one. I'm going to take one that I think no one else will take, so I won't be stealing from Jono. The camera angles didn't show off how good turn one was. It seemed to be a camera on the left-hand side that they were using. So the cars crossed you right to left into turn one, and that didn't kind of show the peril of the decreasing radius and the adverse camber. And I didn't notice a shot from turn three where you see them negotiating that and then coming back down for the left hand, or they didn't seem to use it a lot. So I'm giving that. But Brad looks surprised.
Sorry.
Breaking
Sorry,
news.
Sorry, I just read some more of the quote. I just want to finish.
Let's do it.
I'm doing my best not to say what I want to say, but boop, that guy. And I'm being nice too.
No. Wow, that is not a this incident related, is it? That's like a general that guy.
That's like a general, my seat's under threat. And this guy's dad owns a team and he just gets to stay here every year, regardless of how bad he does.
Yeah, I have to listen back and wonder if my opening thing on Stroll was too much. But that is how I feel. I really do feel like that. I'm just fed up of it. Sorry. I don't think I'm going to get an Aston Martin scoop branded scooter, am I?
No.
Yeah, and that's
what a shame.
I've got Mercedes cap here, Ferrari, McLaren. I'll check the post box if anything green comes through, but right now. Jono, well, who missed the ape? Oh, Jono, you're on telly. People don't know that. You're on telly.
Good point, actually. Yeah, well, like Max Verstappen, Missed Apex is my job and telly is my hobby to the side. But it's been fun.
Side hustle being on TV. Share some links with us to put in the show notes so that people can see you in TV reporter mode, because it's pretty cool.
For sure. I'll try not to. I don't like to shill myself too much.
You're not shilling yourself. I'm shilling you. So send us some links. You can go and check out Jono, because you look like a proper, like, grown up on telly person. And it's just really exciting. So who missed the apex for you?
Thank you. I just to proceed, who missed the apex? Fernando Alonso, I'm a big fan. If you'd like to send Aston Martin gear to me and not spanners, feel free. Aww. I would love some of that gear, since he signed for a couple of years. It can do me well. Who missed the apex for me? We mentioned it earlier, but I just feel the penalty for Logan Sargeant was draconian. And it was like, I want to know more details surrounding how that situation is handled in the future. I'm going to go back to, you're going to laugh at this, 2010 Valencia.
Oh my God.
Yes, just a couple races ago. Fernando Alonso in the Ferrari, Lewis Hamilton passes the safety car line, similar situation to Sargeant. Alonso passed it first, Hamilton ended up overtaking. It took them like 30 laps to sort that out, and then eventually, you know, there's a whole story behind that. Google it if you're interested. But in Sargeant's situation, I want to know more details from the FIA in their stewards report. I want them to explain why Sargeant wasn't notified by the FIA instantly to give that position back, rather than penalizing him because the team made a judgment on millimeters and an interpretation that he was clear. And so that, to me, missed the apex, because I just feel like if it was Johnny Herbert stewarding, I would have had a full book to read by now.
Yeah, but that has been fairly consistent. So when there's been a do you need to hand the place back, normally from, say, cutting the corner or on a chicane, they have said, right, the team decides whether you're meant to give the corner back or not. And then the FIA responds accordingly, because you had that at Singapore a couple of years ago, where Hamilton sort of volunteered to give a place back to Norris that he didn't really need to give back. but that wasn't the stewards. So they kind of put it on the team there as well. All right, one more award before we go. It's the Thing of the Weekend Award. Super hyper positive. And I will just say, in general, sometimes it can feel like we're being negative about things. And if you listen to every sports podcast, that does happen. And it's just because the negative things are more interesting. But just know that I'm aware of that. And I'm always trying to counter it. Because essentially I watch Formula One because I enjoy it, because it brings me joy sometimes. Briefly, that poll up. Right, Brad, who was your thing, or what was your thing of the weekend?
I think Lando Norris for providing at least a non-Red Bull face at the front of the grid, and for, I think, pretty much maximizing the potential of that McLaren. I didn't expect the McLaren. I know there were safety cars. I know this wasn't a normal race. If it had just played out completely organically, then Norris probably wouldn't have ended up on the podium. But in the circumstances, he made the most of it and didn't make mistakes and put his car in front of a much, much faster car. So good job to Norris.
Awesome. I'm going to... Do I go next? I don't want anyone to steal mine, so I'm going for it. I'm going to give it to Joe Guanyu for that magnificent 13th place. He got to stop on the straight. I think he got given champagne, met the love of his life. Everything happened for him at the end of the race. Look, he was crying. He was emotional. It's his home crowd, but you know, P13. But I was arguing with Joe, I think, on Twitter, because he was saying it's the dream to go from the stand to the track. And I can't take that away from him. It is just, you know, I've got my chip on my shoulder about, you know, he got bought his own kart track. I don't think it was as necessarily as hard for him as other people, but meant a lot to him, meant a lot to the fans. And I'm sorry for the meme I posted online poo-pooing that a little bit. So I'm giving him my Thing of the Weekend Award for making that dream come true somehow. All it took was hard work and infinite resources. Christian, what was your Thing of the Weekend?
I'm going to support yours just slightly, because they should do that as a general thing
for the home, the locals. Yeah,
yeah, the Australian driver should be on the pit straight after the race in Australia and so forth. It's a nice little thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Actually, my thing of the week is a Alonso thing as well. While I dwell in the 2007 vibe Alonso Hamilton, I also acknowledge that he's just about the best there is. Mm-hmm. And lap 48, T16 coming into the second, the last corner before the main straight, he just loses the car. How fast he reacted there, just got it. That was just, that is 17-year-old reflexes in a 1,000-year-old body. And that's amazing.
Yeah, he did say that was his best ever drive through a gravel trap. No one else could drive through a gravel trap so well. Okay, I always get a little bit like that when we're praising a mistake. So Sainz was getting lots of praise for crashing quite well in qualifying. Yeah, that was another thing we really didn't, you know, cover was actually it was really...
He didn't crash this time though. So it was, mistake, but he saved it.
Alonso saved it. Sainz in the same position ended up crashing a little bit, but actually a mistake-laden weekend for Sainz. So drove into his teammate, locked up on his new tyres, having to go a stint on those tyres, being a little bit off pace, and that spinning qualifying, which, by the way, Aston Martin protested. I like the needle coming out of Aston Martin sometimes. They love a good appeal, does Aston Martin.
The way you define it is great save, bad car control. I hate it when it's defined as, oh, look at that awesome car control. He saved the car. No, the reason he was about to spin was because of terrible car control. There's a difference between the two. But I just wanted to compliment.
In Christian's defense, if you have that tool in your arsenal, then you're going to perform better overall. If you've got the ability to save it, and Brad's showing us a video of the save.
We're going to get copyrighted, Brad. Careful.
It's more the amount of steering angle. So yeah, I love seeing someone not give up on opposite lock. So often, certainly in my job, I'll see a driver have a moment, the car will get out of shape, it'll get sideways, and they'll attempt to save. They'll apply a certain amount of opposite lock, and it'll get to a point where their arms are a bit uncomfortable and they'll kind of just give up and stay there or straighten up. And Alonso, in a car with such little amount of steering lock available, has got a whole armful on to the point where he's had to let go with one hand and keep going with the other one. Yeah. And it worked. It saved the day, and he continued.
And doing 200 kilometers an hour or whatever they do right there,
Yeah, Jono. I'm on their side now, Jono. Yeah, no, it was really
if
good.
If anyone wants to know his greatest save ever, it wasn't that today. It was go on YouTube, Brazil 2012. He's fighting for a championship. He almost binned it at the exit of like turn three. It's one of the greatest things you'll ever see in Fernando Alonso. One of his best moments. Unfortunately, he didn't win the title that day, but that was a similar save.
Didn't that cost him the title doing that and then getting stuck?
No. He saved it, but it was Vettel's recovery that obviously was different. There's a whole story to that again. I love my classic F1.
I'm just completely derailing this, but I'm going to just do it anyway. I just want to ask the panel, and this is terrible for an audio podcast. We can describe it. This is a very mini driver skills episode happening right now. On. Alonso has the maximum amount of opposite lock-on possible, but where are his tires pointed?
To the
what
right.
What direction?
To the right.
I would argue that they're pointed straight down the track. They're pointed where he wants the car to go.
Yeah.
So the angle of the car is facing across the track, but he's managed to, in the moment, in real time, keep the tires pointed where the car has to go. And anyway, that's what you should do.
I think he tapped the brakes at one stage too. It's just the thinking, the level of thinking under pressure is incredible. I'm going to miss him, and what a driver, what a personality, eh?
I've got to ask Jono, or I don't really want to ask you your thing of the week because you just described 2012 as classic F1, and I hate you now. So what was your thing of the weekend?
My thing of the weekend was Nico Rosberg, and this could also be part of the bad thing of the weekend. He's so incredibly not TV trained, which irritated me sometimes. But the good part about it was he's so unhinged, like we said earlier. I've said this for years. I'm not just saying it today. I said this years ago that we needed more Nico Rosberg on the coverage, and this weekend proved it. He is a fresh voice. Imagine being coached in football or in basketball or whatever sport you play by the same coach for 10 years. Like, Brundle's great, and I like Martin Brundle, but just having a different voice every now and then is actually kind of nice.
Nah, he was fighting the driver I liked a while ago, so baddie bin. Thank you very much to my panel. Go and look up Christian's 90s TV career. Go and get coached by Brad. I'm just going to share stuff. Go and get coached by Brad. It will be one of the best racing purchases you'll ever make. And go and look at Jono being all grown up on TV. Follow me as well. I'm the best one. Spanners ready on most social media. Or you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/MissedApex. Check out what we're doing in Miami and come out, hang out with us on Saturday if you want. And that is at missedapexpodcast.com/Miami. But wherever we see you next, which I think is going to be like Tuesday, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.